Caroline, Willie, and D Mates here in hour number two, 102.5 The Game. The Game Studio brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical. That is Derek Mason back at the studio. Willie Donick here up in Buffalo with the Predators, who are in action tomorrow against the Buffalo Sabres. We're talking about the Titans. They introduced their free agents today. Pretty much budget-heavy free agents, guys who Rand Carthon appears to think are undervalued, not big bucks spent. That's sort of where they are with the roster right now, and that is in the context and in the backdrop of the subject we're talking about right now, is what to do about some of the Titans' staple players who make the most against the salary cap. They don't have a lot of extra room. They know they're trying to sign Jeffrey Simmons. So at the forefront is Kevin Byard, who has a $19.6 million cap hit scheduled. And there's a lot of rumblings about what's going to happen with that. Has he been asked to take a pay cut? What are the options there? There's also Ryan Tannehill, $36.6 million cap hit. And then there's Derrick Henry, $16.3 million, also scheduled against the cap. The other guy that we haven't really talked about is Harold Landry coming back after not playing at all last year at $18.8 million. So, Derek, I'll throw it at you. To me, Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback's a separate thing, right? If you don't have a quarterback, you have no chance of being competitive whatsoever. There's ways to try to get the production back from running back, from safety, et cetera, as important as Kevin Byard and Derrick Henry are. And that is the really dilemma, because emotionally in the locker room, I would see Mike Vrabel saying, man, it's hard for me to go to battle without Kevin Byard, without Derrick Henry. Those are my guys. Those are the heartbeat. Those are the spine of my team, the heart of my team. But Rand Carthon coming in from the outside has got to be looking at it saying, look, the numbers just are out of whack here. We've got to try to address this if we're going to have the strongest roster possible here. So if it's going to happen with Byard, to me, it's probably going to happen on some level with Henry as well eventually.
Yeah, if they don't want to, you know, part ways with Henry. You know, there was sort of, you know, a speculation that, you know, Henry, they were listening to calls, not necessarily putting fillers out, but they were listening to people ask about Derrick Henry. It's since died down, but I'm sure as we get closer to the draft, whether it be Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, these things will pick back up. Now, even Jeffrey Simmons, he's scheduled to make almost $11 million this season. I know they want to get a deal done with him, so that cap number and that you know, that financial hit will be a little bit lower this upcoming season. And they just want him to have a longer-term deal. And I'm sure Jeffrey Simmons wants a longer-term deal. He doesn't want to go into, you know, this season playing under that tag, you know, and rightfully so. I get it. But, you know, guys like Derrick Henry, guys like Harold Landry, Kevin Byard, they may ask those guys, or, you know, Kevin Byard, they've asked him to take a pay cut. They may ask Harold Landry to restructure some of that contract to bring the money down. They may ask Derrick Henry to, you know, take a pay cut or restructure or something like that. So, you know, this thing is not done and over with just yet. You know, we heard about the Derrick Henry. Now we're hearing about the Kevin Byard. We heard about the Ryan Tannehill potentially. This thing, I believe, is going to heat back up again once free agency is done and the draft come rolling along, and then after that. So, because they want to clear money, not necessarily saying they have to, but I know they want to have more money, you know, in their pocket to play with than not. So you go to a guy like Kevin Byard and see if he wants to take a pay cut again. For what I've gathered, he did not say he wanted to be released, but he did say, no, he's not taking a pay cut now. It's up to the Titans to figure out what they want to do. You know, and we talked briefly. Do you go to Ryan Tannehill? Well, you got to be prepared if you go to Ryan Tannehill. You got to be prepared for Ryan Tannehill to say the same exact thing that Kevin Byard said. Then what are you going to do? You know, because the two guys that are making the most money, you would potentially ask them to take a pay cut or restructure, and they say no. Then what do you do?
We're going to talk to Teron Davenport about this about an hour from now. We'll get his thoughts. He's been trying to figure out what he can about this situation with Kevin Byard. Also, he was checking in on the five free agents that the Titans introduced today. couple of them have San Francisco backgrounds, which definitely is Rand Carthon putting his stamp on the roster. And we'll take your calls and texts too. 737-1025, area code 615. It's brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sunny text, if the Titans are under the cap, then why try to get these guys to take pay cuts? What am I missing? Well, there's Big Jeff, right? That's where you start.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think Rand Carthon wants to be able to have more resources to hit other weaknesses on the roster. Still, the offensive line needs some work. You'd love to beef up your receiving core, I would think. I mean, there's a lot of things that you look at. And, Derek, you've said it all along. The Titans' overall strength of the roster needs some work. So, to mm-hmm. me, that's the answer to Sonny's question. But give me your thoughts.
I'm riding along the lines with you, Willie. Again, yeah, the Titans sit in a better place than what they were in regards to the salary cap or monies, you know, they have to pay individual players. But if you are a new GM, you want to have as much sort of, you know, firepower as you can have in regards to dollars. If you got a lot of dollars, then you can go out and make some moves that you probably wouldn't have been able to make. Because there are more moves to come for this team, not just a draft. There are moves that they're going to make after the draft, once individuals start to get cut. And they're making moves now, you know, with, you know, sort of the second or third wave of free agency, in a sense. So they're not going to spend a lot of money getting guys. They're going to get guys for bargain prices, for short-term deals, to help them build this team back up. So to me, the more money, the better, you know, moving forward, especially having a new GM.
Mark in Gallatin, Texas. Rumors Titans may be post-draft dark horse for Lamar Jackson. Are they cutting or are they thinking about cutting for that? I would be pretty surprised at that one, D-Maze. I still think Lamar Jackson, at the end of the day, will be a Raven.
Yeah, it's hard for me to see him not in a Ravens uniform, but it is surprising. I got my own theories, but it is surprising that no team that we heard of has not inquired or have not talked with Lamar about a potential contract. Now, we know what they would have to give up if the Baltimore Ravens don't match it. They would have to give up 2 first-round draft picks, and I don't know, you know, how many teams are willing to give up 2 first-round draft picks. You know, but I always think about stuff like this sort of in the macro sense. You know, if not Lamar Jackson, if this was one of these other quarterbacks, would the teams be making a push to get them on their team and giving up 2 first-round draft picks? Possibly. But you never know. I don't know if the NFL wants to start that precedent of giving, you know, fully guaranteed 3 and 4 year contracts, 5 year contracts, maybe a year, 2 years. Yes. But 3, 4, man, it's like pulling teeth with them. So I don't know if the Titans would be in the market for Lamar Jackson. Now, if they got him, they would have to give up 2 first round draft picks. Now, are the Titans willing to give up that?
And I would theorize that to get Lamar Jackson, you have to probably guarantee the salary, which is that's the mm-hmm. breaking point of the Ravens. That's why he's in this situation. So you're going to guarantee his salary and give up 2 first-round picks. That's just so that they don't match the offer. If you do anything short of that, the Ravens will probably match the offer anyway. Mm-hmm. Just keep Lamar Jackson. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. If
he's a great player, but guaranteeing his salary and giving up 2 first round picks, I don't think I could go that far, especially where the Titans are in the universe right now.
As much as I like Lamar,
in the AFC.
As much as I like Lamar, as much as I like Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow, I don't know if a GM will stomach giving up guarantee close to $200 million, if not $200 million, and two first round draft picks, that means you better win a Super Bowl. That's a fireable offense if you don't get to the Super Bowl and win it. It truly is, because you're giving up all of these assets to get a quarterback, and you guaranteeing him, you know, 3-4 years, possibly even 5 years. That's great for the player. I'm all for it for the player. But I also, again, I also think about it from the other side. As much as I am pro player, and I feel Lamar should get a guaranteed contract, just like I think Mahomes and Burrow and those guys should get guaranteed contracts, I understand the other side of it too. I understand, you know, the business side of guaranteeing a guy and giving up two first round draft picks. If it doesn't work, man, you set your franchise back a lot of years.
When we come back, we will shift gears. We'll talk about Vanderbilt and their win in the NIT, and I will also vent one more time about why I thought they should have been in the NCAA tournament. But I give them a lot of credit for continuing to play hard. They're now one game from New York City and getting to the NIT. They've got to beat a very, very good UAB team who's the 4 seed out of their bracket. It's got 27 wins on the year. D-Mace and I will talk about it. A miraculous comeback against Juwan Howard and the Michigan Wolverines on Saturday at Memorial Gym. So we'll take a segment on that when we come back. Don't forget, Teron Davenport at 1 o'clock. We'll get back into the Titans and their situation heavy at that time. We'll also touch on the Predators before this hour is over as well. A tough loss in New York against a very, very hot Rangers team right now. Where does that leave Nashville with where they're going right now? Stay tuned. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Back at you, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Got a little bit of, what's that? Why am I not, why am I forgetting the name of the song? Don't tell me, Nick. Man. Time.
No.
I couldn't hear it. I could not hear it.
It's Jungle Love. I know it's Jungle Love.
Oh, it's Jungle Love. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the group is Time.
Morris Day and the Time.
Morris Day, yes.
I couldn't hear it. Yes. Yeah, that's the Little Purple Rain.
I didn't know if you were guessing the song.
Not the song. I knew what the song was. I was thinking, like, man, it was slipping my mind. But it's the Time, Morris Day. Everybody knows that.
A great cameo role in Purple Rain by Morris Day and the Time. They are kind of the adversary for Prince and the Revolution, right? Pretty strong stuff.
That was his laugh.
Speaking of back in the day, it was a lot of fun watching ESPN's broadcast. I didn't see it live. It was right head up with the Predators-Jets game, but I went back and watched it. And ESPN had a good broadcast of Vanderbilt and Michigan. And on the color analysis was Corey Alexander, who was also a really good college player in the 90s at Virginia and played in the NBA for a while. So he was a contemporary of both Jerry Stackhouse and Juwan Howard. So there was a lot of nostalgia going back and forth of the great playing careers, long NBA careers of Stackhouse and Howard. So it was a fun matchup. Michigan, with their great center, Hunter Dickinson, was given Vanderbilt all kinds of trouble. I would have loved to have seen that game with Liam Robbins going up against Dickinson. That would have been a great head-to-head matchup. Mm-hmm. But as it was, Michigan was leading by 8 with 1 minute to go, and Vanderbilt came back and won. They caused some turnovers very late, 2 or 3 in a row. And Hunter Dickinson was called for goaltending on what ended up being the game-winning shot by Tyron Lawrence. So they really pulled it out of the fire, D-Mace, and so a little more Memorial Magic for Jerry Stackhouse. That's now, 12-2 in their last 14?
Yes, they're playing really good basketball right now. And yeah, I know Vanderbilt fans are out there saying, see, we should have been in the tournament. Those teams that went ahead of us, they are already gone. And look at us. We're still playing in NIT. And you're right. I mean, I don't think people look at the NIT as, you know, some grandioso thing. But it does give Vandy more opportunities to play basketball and to, you know, gain that experience. And we talked about this before the tournament started when we found out they were making it. I said that to me, and I think they have a good shot at doing this. They play UAB when? Today or tomorrow? Somewhere around there?
Wednesday at 6 okay. is when they play.
They play UAB. But if this team, to me, because they were sort of, I don't know if they were the last four out or the first four. I think they might have been the first four out. But if they go on and get into the NIT championship game and win it, it should put the committee on notice. Like, there has to be. If you watch Vanderbilt that last month of the season, hell, if you watch them during the season, that was a good basketball team. They dealt with injuries to arguably their best player, and they had some really good wins on their resume. Now, they had a few bad losses as well, but yep. I think their huge wins overshadowed, at least in my eyes, overshadowed some of their, you know, bad losses, whether it be the Grambling or the 50-point debacle versus Alabama. Now, Alabama is the best team in the country, or one of, you don't want to consider them the best team, they're no lower than number two. But you can't, even with that, you can't lose to Alabama by close to 50 points or 50 points.
You know what? I agree with you. When you feel like you're snubbed, and I'm sure Vanderbilt did, and I know they did. Jerry Stackhouse in the post-game press conference had a funny line. I don't know if you heard it, Derek, but he was saying, you know, what do you think of how the SEC teams are playing in the NCAA tournament? He goes, I'm rooting for them. He goes, I don't think I've ever rooted for Kentucky before, but I want them to win because we have a good league. And he said, we also kicked that ass of a lot of those teams. So he's kind of sticking it to the committee saying, you know, we were 11-7 in this league. We played Kentucky three times. We played Tennessee twice. We played Alabama twice. So it's not like the league schedule was soft. The league schedule was the toughest among the teams. So he's unquestionably still bitter about it. But what I like about what Vanderbilt has done is there have been a number of times that they could have just folded up shop and crumbled. You know, when they lost to Grambling, that was mm-hmm. a tough situation. You shouldn't have lost to Grambling.
No.
But they stayed confident. They kept playing well. Then they beat Arkansas, who's still playing in the Sweet 16. And then right after that, Liam Robbins got hurt before they played Alabama the first time. So they went five games without playing, without Liam Robbins. And they still hung in there. They were competitive. They lost some games, but they were still right in there. Then they got Robbins back and started knocking teams off. Then he gets hurt again. Could have been easy to fold up the shop at that point. But they beat Kentucky twice. They beat Mississippi State. Then they get snubbed in the tournament. Don't get a bid to the NCAA, and they've kept on winning two games where you do see that sometimes in the NIT. The disappointment of not making the NCAA, you lose some intensity, you're not really dialed in, and you lose. That's what happened to Clemson, right? Clemson was one of the teams considered. They didn't get a bid, and they got beat in the first round of the NIT. I've seen that happen to a lot of teams. So I really commend Vanderbilt for playing with a chip on their shoulder and they've stayed in the fight when it would have been easy to just to say, yeah, you know what, we got screwed, forget about it.
Yeah, it would have been, but they continue to play tough. You know, they beat a good Michigan team, and it's hard for me to say that. but they beat it's not a great Michigan team, but it's a good Michigan team. If you watch them throughout the year, they've had some good wins, but they've been up and down.
Tough schedule.
Yeah,
very tough schedule.
Exactly. But they've been sort of like Vandy, you know, they've been up and down, and I don't think they had to deal with as many injuries, to key guys as Vandy, but, you know, Juwan Howard has, you know, kept that team fighting up until that point to where they played Vandy. And, you know, to me, that was a good win for Vandy. You know, albeit it was at home, but to beat a Michigan team and then move further along. Now they got UAB Wednesday. And this team can, you know, if they continue to play the way they have been, they can find themselves, you know, in a championship game if things continue to go the way they have been.
Now, I was just texted, and I want to thank this texter because I just learned something. I didn't know this. I was sitting there. I was taking pictures of the Empire State Building, Madison Square Garden. I was going back to the day when I was a freshman at Vanderbilt. We won the NIT at Madison Square Garden. I was getting all nostalgic, and I was going to send a text or send a tweet out, hey, Commodores, you're one game from getting back here. And JC in Goodlettsville says, hey, Willie, the NIT Final Four is now in Las Vegas. I was like, what? How can that be? You can't move the NIT from New York. That's the whole point of still having the NIT is the nostalgia of playing at Madison Square Garden. What happened? They moved it. Hey. I looked it up. It's true. The semifinals in the title game are now in Vegas. I don't know what happened there.
They decided to move it.
I don't know why they did that.
Hey.
Come on.
They weren't thinking about you, Willie, I tell you that.
They weren't thinking about me. I'm glad I didn't put, you know, I would look like a complete idiot if I start putting out tweets and stuff from New York saying, hey, come on up there. Let's go, Commodore fans. Let's come on up. Willie, the games aren't here.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would have been
real
bad.
Thank you, JC, for saving me from looking like a complete fool.
Yeah. Well, wow. I mean, if you look at, you know, what they were able to do against Michigan. Now, they didn't shoot particularly well from the three-point line. They're going to have to get better because
– That's right. That's what I was impressed with because they did not shoot very well from the outside in that game. And they're going to need to shoot better. You're right.
Yeah, they're going to need to shoot better. I mean, Lawrence had a big game. Ezron, as usual, he was consistent. Colin Smith, he contributed double-digit points. They're going to have to get more points from other guys, and they're going to have to, you know, find some points from their bench. I don't know how deep Coach Stackhouse goes. Was it 7-8?
Yeah, and remember, Miles Studi decided to hit the transfer portal, which is another stroke of adversity they were hit with. He decided before the season was over to hit the transfer portal, which I don't get. This is so dumb to me. You shouldn't be able to go into the transfer portal until the college basketball season is over. And so that needs to be addressed. But you're right. They're going to have to be at their best because don't sleep on UAB. I think when that point spread comes back, I don't know. It's not going to be Vanderbilt is a heavy favorite at all. I think UAB you're going to find is really good. They're 27-9 on the season. They won the Conference USA title last year. So be ready for that to be a dogfight. No question about it. Andy Kennedy has done a really good job. The former coach at Ole Miss, he used to play at UAB. In fact, when I was playing at Vanderbilt, he was playing for UAB. We actually played head-to-head at Memorial Gym, I can remember. My freshman room, both of us had hair. Now we're both going with the Chris Mason look. So that'll be fun. Wednesday at 6, one game to get to the NIT semifinals, even if it's not at Madison Square Garden. Bummer. All right, when we come back, we will switch gears. We'll talk Preds for a segment. Then we'll get back into the Titans. Remember, Teron Davenport will join us at 1 o'clock. But we'll get a state of the Preds when we come back. 7-0 last night after the Saturday tough loss against Winnipeg, where they almost gutted it out, even after they lost Roman Josi to injury after the first period. Where do they go from here? Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And Jarl Halak picks up the shutout here this evening as the Rangers defeat the Predators by a final of 7-0. Predators outshot by the Rangers here this evening. And what a dominant first period performance by New York. Absolutely incredible.
It was incredible. Not in a good way for the Predators. 7-0. The Rangers, who have been a machine here recently, they beat the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-0 on Saturday, came back and beat the Predators last night 7-0. And in the first period, they scored, if you can believe it, on 6 straight shots. That is something you don't see very often. So Nashville just didn't have it last night after we've talked about for the last few weeks playing unexpectedly well But D-Mace, this is the thing that I thought sort of caught up to him last night. Every game, they seem to lose another player. You know, earlier this week, they lost Ryan McDonough. Now they lose Roman Josi. So now you're down not only two great players, but also your leadership group has been compromised. You're replacing those guys with young players or, you know, minor leaguers who are fighting to get into the league. And sooner or later, when you're playing a really good team like the Rangers, it's going to catch up to you. And that's what happened last night. You usually can rely on Kevin Lankinen and UC Saros to give you a chance to win. But, you know, they weren't perfect last night. They didn't get a whole lot of help in front of them. And you put it all together, and it was a disaster. But it is only one loss. And somehow Winnipeg got shut out by the Blues last night. So they had a chance to bury the Predators and didn't do it. So kind of a weird weekend.
Yeah, the hockey gods are you know, trying their best to forge a path for the Predators to make it into the playoffs. And, you know, when you got a young team like this and they've made the move that they have made, and we all know why they made those moves. But on top of those moves that have been made, you got key guys and are starting to go down. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with it's just, you know, sort of that war of attrition. These older guys got to play more minutes, or they got to do things a little bit different now because this team is so young and they're pushing because they know in their mind, even though there has been some turnover, we're still in a great position to make a playoff run. And when you're out there each and every night giving it your all, you know, there may be a situation where, you know, you get injured. And, you know, I've been part of injured teams, and you bring in the young guys and you're playing well. But, you know, eventually, you know, reality sets in and, you know, they're young guys for a reason. And they are getting an opportunity right now for a reason. Because if everything was, you know, peachy creamy, a lot of these guys would not be at this level. But they're fighting hard, and they're going out there and they're doing, you know, the best that they can. But when you run into teams that are clearly better than you, I didn't think that, you know, a team had the capability of scoring 7 goals on 7 shots. But I guess the Rangers did. But, I mean, listen, it doesn't take away what this team has been able to do in regards to them being behind the 8-ball. And like you said, there's still a possibility that, you know, the stars align and they're making it into the playoffs.
Yeah, they still have meaningful games.
Yeah.
And that's to their credit. And so what I'm, you know, just last night, for example, the Rangers, they were a Final Four team last year. They traded for 2 superstars, Vladimir Tarasenko. I don't know if I would say he's a superstar. He's a star. There's no question. Maybe not superstar. Patrick Kane is a superstar, and they've got him. So they added 2 guys like that to a team that was already really good. And they only had 1 regular player that was injured last night, one of their defensemen. So they were relatively healthy for this time of the year. So you have that. And you have the Predators, who are missing 6 regular players after they traded 4 guys, right? On top of that, they're still missing Roman Josi, Ryan McDonough, Alex Carrier, 3 of their top 4 defensemen, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Juuso Parsonen, and 3 very important forwards when you get down to it. They had, you know, there was a lot of math we were doing. I think they had 41% of their payroll unavailable last night. They had only like $38 million worth of payroll in the lineup as opposed to the Rangers. Very, very, very different. So if you're wondering, how did that happen? How does 7-0 happen? That's how it happened right there. Yeah. So you take away your superstar in Roman Josi. And that's how you wonder. Now, like you said, Derek, if you're in that bunker, you say, look, you start with John Hines and you say, look, there's a formula to win every game. We're going to find a way. There's a way we can still be successful. It just makes it very tough when Roman Josi goes out and you're calling up Jordan Gross, who's a nice player. He's a guy that I think could play in the NHL regularly someday, but he's been most of his career an AHL guy. And so that's who you replace Roman Josi with. That's tough to say you're going to still be able to just keep going. At a certain point, it's kind of, you're kind of running out of solutions when you keep losing top players. Now, the question will be, when will they get some of these guys back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was reported by Elliot Friedman and I think Dan Rosen, Josi. John Hines did make a comment on it before the game, day-to-day upper body, and I think he said we're not sure exactly what it is, but that would tell you that it's very, you know, it's hard for me to sit there and say based on what he said there that he'll be in there tomorrow. He wasn't with the team yesterday, so, you know, that tells you that tomorrow's game against the Sabres probably going to have to find a way without Josi. You know, will they get anybody else back? I don't know, and there's no timetable on some of these guys, so. To me, for them to stay in the race at some point soon, they've got to start getting some of these guys back. They can't just keep losing guys. There's nobody else to call up.
No, you're right about that. So when is that point where, you know, you look at it and you assess it as a head coach or as a GM in trots and say, you know what, let's not rush these guys back. Let's just let these younger guys continue to play this out, because we're at a point now that, you know, it's not going to matter. It's more likely than not that we will prepare for the off season a little bit earlier than what we expected. When does that point come?
I think they're already, you know, I think if you look at Forsberg, for example, we talked about his situation. You saw what happened against the Flyers. He's now missed 18 games.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's trying to come back, but you have to be careful with the situation. I remember your passionate discussion about Tua,
mm-hmm.
right, and how the Dolphins handled that. You and Eddie George really got emotional on the air talking about that. I think you got to commend the Predators. They don't want to be in that situation because, hey, we need Philip Forsberg. Let's push him back in there. I think they're being very, very careful with that situation. You know, we know Ryan Johansson is not coming back anytime soon, because of his situation, a cut on the leg. Carrier took the shot up into the collarbone area. They gave a timetable for him, 4 to 6 weeks. So there's still a couple more weeks to go on that. Ryan McDonagh, we're not sure. It's been 4 games now without him. He's such an important player. Yusso Parsons is the other one where I'm not really sure what the timetable is on him. We know how vague they are. But as far as your question, Derek, I think when they're ready to come back, they'll come back. I think what they would like to do, whether they make the playoffs or not, is to keep putting the young players that they really have an eye on for the coming years, keep putting them in situations where the game has intensity and has meaning, you know, so you can get a true evaluation. What you don't want is for the last 6 to 10 games, mm-hmm. let's say a guy scores 5 goals and 6 assists in the last 10 or 11 games, but you're out of it.
Uh-huh.
Is that really a true indicator of what that guy is? Going forward, I think you get a much truer thing if you're saying, okay, you're still in the race. This game meant something, and he was able to produce.
No, you're right. So, you know, you just – I've just wondered, you know, with these injuries, would it even be, you know, I'm not going to say smart, but would even, you know, matter if you brought those guys back in or not? Or would you just say, you know what? Let's just rest these guys and get them to the offseason as healthy as possible and sort of go down that route.
Yeah, it's a fair question. It's something I'm sure that they will look at. But as long as they're mathematically in it the way they are,
mm-hmm.
I think their mindset will still be, you know, how quick can we get some of these guys back? It's, you know, it's been really frustrating. And up until last night, it had been really admirable. I thought they might find a way to pull it out against the Jets. They had a shot even after losing Josi, but it just caught up to him. And the greatest example would have been in the overtime. Usually, who's out there in that 3-on-3? Who's perfect for the 3-on-3? Roman Josi. He zooms all over the place. He could play long stretches, and they didn't have him. So they had to play Jeremy Lauzon, who is a good player, but he's just not the type of player that's going to be able to cover all that ice in the 3-on-3. He hadn't been out there before, and he was exploited on the game-winning goal. Just one example of what happened, you know, when you're short, critical players like that. McDonagh would usually play 3-on-3. Carrier would usually play 3-on-3. Ekholm played 3-on-3. You need that one defenseman in there. So other than Tyson Berry, they really didn't have somebody that has played a lot of three-on-three overtime minutes. So the lack of depth does catch up eventually. But we'll see what happens tomorrow against Buffalo. Buffalo also lost 7-0 yesterday to the Boston Bruins. So you're going to have two teams that are trying to figure it out, and they will be very angry that they lost 7-0 in their previous game. When we come back, we'll start looking ahead to Teron Davenport at 1 o'clock. We'll go through some of the Titans situations here as we move forward. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Why
have the teams let you go?
So with me and San Fran, they told me straight up, we can't offer you anything. If we offer you something, it'll be disrespectful to you. So go test the market out and see. With Jacksonville, it was a shock to me. I ain't gonna lie. After the year, I thought I was gonna be a Jacksonville Jaguar. But I felt disrespected because I came over there, built up the culture, brought a whole lot of energy, changed the city, changed the town, and I felt like I was in my rightful mind. I was gonna be a Jacksonville Jaguar, but that didn't happen. I still love the players, love the teammate, love the city, love the fans, but yeah. We got to see him twice.
That is Arden Key, introduced today along with the other free agents. The Titans brought up five, and we're going to talk to Teron Davenport about them to start the 1 o'clock hour. Arden Key will play for a cap hit of $2.9 million, right around there. Mm-hmm. And so compare that in his production to what they were paying Bud Dupree. The idea is you get way more bang for your buck with Key as opposed to Dupree. You could almost make a song about that. It rhymes, but I don't think that's what they had in mind there. But you see what I'm saying? You got it.
Yeah.
Sort of like you could hear sort of the anger in Arden Key. He feels like he has a chance to be a bigger, more important player in the grand scheme of things. And so he's going to have an opportunity with the Titans there.
Yeah, he is. It's going to have an opportunity now that they've released Bud Dupree, and it's sort of they're retooling that linebacker position, choosing not to re-sign David Long Jr., cutting Zach Cunningham. So they're retooling that linebacker position and that outside linebacker position, rush in. So Arden Key, he did well playing – under Nico Ryans in San Fran. And you know what type of defense that was, a very aggressive defense. It was one of the top defenses, and it has been, in the National Football League. Then he goes to Jacksonville, and he's a integral part in what they, what they were able to do as a team. He thought that he was going to at least – sign, a contract, whether it be for another year or another 3 or 5 years. He thought at least he would be there, considering what he showed them, Jacksonville, last year. But, he was a role player for Jacksonville. He wasn't a starter for that team. So they felt that they could possibly, move on from him and find somebody else at that position. It's going to be interesting to see what he brings to this team, because it's not like he's a huge sack guy, but he does pressure the quarterback, and he hasn't started a lot as a player. So into the season with 4.5 sacks, so it's going to be interesting to see what he brings. And I'm sure Shane Bowen can get more, some more out of him this year. Considering he is a young player. So he went from one great defense in San Fran to a good defense and a young defense in Jacksonville. Now he's coming to another really good defense that loves to pressure the quarterback from the outside. So he's going to get his opportunity to get to the quarterback. He said he felt disrespected. You got to go out there and produce now. So we'll see what happens.
And I can't get away from the theme of all of these guys. guys who ran Carthon, especially a couple of them that have San Francisco ties, mm-hmm. you know, he has a background. He has a knowledge on them. Also, there's that analytic look. He feels like they're undervalued. And take a look at what he got him for, right? We just mentioned Arden Key, what he counts against the cap. Not much. Not much at all. Arden Key, 2.8. Aziz Alshire, 2.2 million. So they're hoping to get something close, if not better, than the guys he's replacing for a lot less money. Daniel Brunskill, 1.9 against the cap. Luke Gifford, 1.7 against the cap. And I'm looking for Dillard on the spot rack, and I'm not finding him right now. What is he counting against the cap?
I don't know if it's...
Because he's another, that's another guy, obviously, that they think, in fact, I'm looking at it, there's no salary attached to his name on SpotRack, so I'm not sure what's going on with his salary. It's not been put on there, but he's a guy that, as we discussed, you know, mm-hmm. they feel like he has a chance to start. He's been playing behind somebody really good, and they think he's better than a backup per se, and he was available.
Yeah, they're hoping that these guys that they brought in, you know, whether it's Luke Gifford, Alshire, Brunskill, or, you know, Dillard or Arden Key. And I'm really Arden Key and the other defensive guys. They're hoping that they can come in and you know, elevate their play at a price that is helpful. And that's minimum for the Tennessee Titans. You know, I don't know if they look at these guys as long-term fixes. Possibly, depending on how they play this upcoming season, they can be. But these are guys that they have targeted that they feel are Vrabel-type guys, guys that Rand Carthon has known and has watched in practice and, you know the personality, so to speak. So you bring them in here, and you just hope that they elevate their play a little bit more. To say that
you hope
these
that
guys
are hungry,
exactly,
and take the opportunity. Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll talk to Teron about that next. Teron Davenport, ESPN.com, talking with TD, always up on the tights. He'll start the 1 o'clock hour with us next here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game.